This episode of Dean Bakari's Meaningful Show is brought to you by Flashbooks, where you can get best-selling business and self-improvement book summaries that you can read or listen to in under 20 minutes. To learn more and get started for just a buck today, visit www.getflashnotes.com. Welcome to the Meaningful Show podcast, where every single week we work to bring you an inspiring insight, idea, or interview to help you live better, work better, and be better both in life and in business. Brought to you by MeaningfulHQ.com, we've got one very simple goal here on this show, and that is to help you do more of what matters and less of what doesn't. I'm your host, Dean Bakari, and if you're ready, then I'm ready. So let's get into it. Whatever it is that you do for a living, I can guarantee you that to some extent it requires you to sell. Every interaction in life, in fact, not just your job, pivots on your attempt to sell something, which is why it's crucial that you learn about how to do it. And today's podcast is, in fact, dedicated to teaching you a handful of the core fundamental principles of selling, which again, is a skill that everybody should master regardless of whether you're selling products to potential buyers or you're trying to sell your friends on which movie to watch. Now, this piece was inspired by a book called Sell or Be Sold, written by Grant Cardone. Sell or Be Sold. He's got a bunch of catchy titles for his books, and some of them are kind of funny too. This other one he's got is called If You're Not First, You're Last. And then he's got another one called Be Obsessed or Be Average. And this one's called Sell or Be Sold. They're catchy, but they're all good, by the way. They're all good books, at least to me. I've extracted a good amount of value from each of them. And this one, again, that we're going over today is called Sell or Be Sold. And the book, I got to tell you, it's packed with actionable insights on developing your abilities to sell your ideas, your services, your products, and anything else that really just helps you to improve your life and achieve your goals, whether that's a physical product or an idea. And today we're going to look at some of my favorite big ideas and actionable insights from the book. So let's dive right into it. The first idea I'm going to share with you from Sell or Be Sold is this: the idea that everything is selling. In the book, he tells us that selling is used every day by every person on this planet. No one is excluded. Selling is not just a job or a career. Selling is essential to the survival and well-being of every living individual. Your ability to do well in life, Cardone says, depends on your ability to sell others on the things in which you believe. Selling is not just a job. Selling is a way of life. So at its core, what is selling really? Selling is really just persuading someone to do something. And people typically think of the selling of physical objects when they think about sales, and they're not wrong. Land can be sold, food can be sold, clothes can be sold, resources, technology, appliances, you name it. But selling is about much more than just buying products. There's another dimension of selling that we all engage in on a daily basis, and that is the sale of ideas. Things like comfort, luxury, simplicity, security, or things like you trying to convince a friend or a partner that going in one direction is better than going in another direction. Or you trying to convince a sibling that Cinnamon Toast Crunch tastes way better than cornflakes, right? If you successfully get them to realize that Cinnamon Toast Crunch is better than cornflakes, then you have successfully sold them something. You have sold them the idea. You've sold them a belief that they can now adopt. So that's a successful sale right there as well. So you don't always need to have an exchange of money. And so all of these are ideas that can be sold. For instance, another idea that can be sold is the idea of insurance. For example, when you buy car insurance, you're buying peace of mind. The idea that if something were to happen to your car, God forbid, you know that your insurance company will cover the cost of repairing your car after an accident. People also buy ideas about what beliefs, again, to adopt and which actions to take in their lives. Missionaries, they sell belief in their religion. A guy might sell his partner on the idea that one concert would be a better idea to see than another. A parent might sell her daughter on finishing her vegetables or doing her homework. I'm selling you right now on finishing this podcast episode, right? So the bottom line is that if you want to achieve anything, whether you're selling shoes or whether you're selling ideas or selling your wife on why you should turn your backyard into an outdoor gym, like I successfully did recently, then it's important to know how to sell. And selling is, again, it's an invaluable asset that you can adopt, that anybody can adopt. All it requires is learning how to do it. Unfortunately, though, it's a skill that most people never learn. They're never taught how to do it, or they're not taught how to do it well. But all that stops now, baby. At least for you, it does, with some of these core fundamental tactics on selling that I'm going to share with you. And let's get started with an exercise that Cardone recommends in the book. An actionable insight that he talks about is the idea of making a list. And you could do this in your journal or a piece of paper or on your phone. Just pull something out to write with and make a list of all the roles that you play in your life. That is, sibling, parent, significant other, employee, board member, volunteer. Whatever that is for you, make a list of all the roles that you have in your life. So some examples might be, for me, for instance, I am a husband, I am a son, I am a brother, I'm a father, I am the CEO of Flashbooks, I am a speaker, I'm a podcaster, I'm a writer. And so those are just some of the roles that I have in my life. Now, this list that you have of all the roles in your life, after you do this, put it on one side or draw a line down the middle of the paper or give yourself some extra space and make another list. Now, on this list, what you want to do is list out all of the different ways that selling is involved in each of these roles in your life. And this then shows you how important selling is to your whole life, not just to your job. So for instance, as the CEO of Flashbooks, I need to ensure that we continue to grow our subscriber base and provide value to people. And one way to do that is to go out there and sell subscriptions to people. I might sell subscriptions to a large company and get their entire employee base on board. I might sell subscriptions to listeners of our podcast and get you on board. And that requires selling. It requires convincing, and it requires the transfer of value to other people. So in another role in my life as speaker, I might convince, if I'm speaking to an audience, convince the audience of the idea that I'm there to share with them, to take action on the idea or on the message. Okay, so those are just a couple of examples from my own life. Now, what you want to do is hit pause on this podcast episode and do this for yourself. Try this exercise. Pull out a sheet of paper, make a straight line down the middle of it, draw a straight line, and then on the left-hand side, list out all of the roles that you play in your life, however many of those roles that you actually have. You know, don't do any more than you need to, don't do any less than you need to, but just list them all out. And then on the right-hand side, list out at least one way in which selling is involved in each of the roles that you have in your life. You could just draw a very simple arrow, right? So for number one, role is parent. And then you draw a straight arrow from left to right, straight to the way in which selling is involved on the right-hand side. Boom, that's it. Now move on to the next one and do the same thing. And that will help you realize how important selling really is to your whole life, and not just your job, but in every arena of your life. Let's move on to the second big idea I'm going to share with you, and that is on practice and commitment and why you need both in order to achieve greatness in your life. He tells us in the book, a quote that I really like is that the guy who thinks the grass is greener over there is the same guy who never commits to taking care of the pasture he already has. So, so true. A lot of people, they tend to undervalue what they can do and overvalue what other people can do. Again, people tend to undervalue what they can do and overvalue what others can do. They'll look at somebody who's achieved a certain level of greatness, a level that they themselves, they would love to achieve, but then they don't think they can. They say, gee, you know, that other person, they're just on an entirely different level than I am. I could never do that. But that's nonsense. Anybody can become great. People who become great work their way to greatness. They worked their way to that position through a level of commitment that perhaps, if you haven't achieved your goals or your desired level of greatness yet, that perhaps you simply haven't convinced yourself to reach as of yet. And that requires commitment. Before you can become great, you must become a professional. And becoming a professional requires serious commitment, whatever your craft. And the first step from amateur to professional is to stop thinking of the greats as others. They're no different than you. They didn't reach the top by wishing and getting lucky, but rather by understanding that their fate was their responsibility. And after you admit that you're in charge, that you're responsible, you're just one skip away from rocketing to the top. And if you want to be a pro at selling, which is what this book that we're talking about today is all about, then you've got to completely immerse yourself in that arena. You want to spend almost all your time focusing on selling. You want to listen to audio programs, audiobooks, or podcasts on selling when you're commuting to work. If you're sitting in traffic for a good portion of your day, which I know a lot of people do, I used to do it as well, instead of, you know, listening to that Justin Bieber song over and over again, you know, turn on an audiobook, download a book, or start listening to podcasts on business and personal growth like you are right now. Maybe you're already doing this, but the idea is to spend the majority of your time learning, and in this case, learning about selling. You want to take notes of your sales interactions, for instance, while you're at work. Jot down every customer's hesitations, every customer's objections, and as well as how you might try to handle those objections. Record your phone calls, legally, of course. Practice with coworkers, videotape it, do role plays, spend your lunches practicing, take fewer coffee breaks. On the breaks that you do take, don't spend them all complaining about how other salespeople just have it better. Don't blame bad numbers on a bad economy or on your customers. It's not the customers, it's not the economy, it's you. Take responsibility. Now, that might have sounded harsh. I know it did, but there's beauty in taking responsibility because it puts you back in charge. It puts you in charge. It doesn't feel good to look in the mirror and be fat and out of shape. But the moment you do it is the moment that you realize it's time to make a change. You look and you say, this is what I'm like right now. I don't like it. And now it's time to change. That's called commitment. And you can't make full commitment without accepting full responsibility and knowing that you have the control, that you are in charge. And you have the ability to change your failures into successes. Don't hope to get better. Just get better. Spend your evenings reviewing your notes, reviewing your recordings. Patterns then will start to jump out at you, both of consistent customer complaints and of how you respond and which responses do and do not work. And dedicated study of these patterns with an unbiased, unemotional lens, that's what's going to allow you to start predicting customer interactions. This is a big part that he really goes in depth about in the book. You want to be able to predict what other people are doing, what they're going to do. Predict customer interactions. When you can predict, you can know ahead of time how to respond to each and every interaction. And ready responses boost confidence. They boost your confidence as well as the buyer's confidence because they feel what you're feeling. If you feel hesitant, uneasy, you lack confidence, then, well, guess what? The customer is going to feel hesitant, uneasy, and lack confidence in buying from you. And so keep that in mind. Get some ready responses and, you know, get those and put them in your pocket. You know, have some ready responses. And after enough practice, after enough interactions with customers, you'll be able to do this. And then you'll be able to put them in your back pocket and just be able to pull them out like that. As soon as a customer objects to something, then boom, you'll have a response ready to go because you've done it before, you've been there before. And it'll allow you then to close more sales. When you know more, you sell more and you earn more. And so this is really the first result of becoming a sales professional, a real pro. It's a key step because without the ability to predict, and Cardone just really drives this home in the book. Without the ability to predict, you will never have a full grasp of the selling process. All your attempts, even the successful ones, will be mere floundering and guesswork if you don't learn how to predict, be behavior, to predict the patterns that your customers are making. And in their patterns of behavior, their patterns of thought, the patterns in which they interact with you. And you want to reach that point where you know that you've always got, or most of the time at least, have the correct responses. And the only way to do that is to have a lot of wrong responses, to get in front of a lot of customers, to mess up, and then learn from those mess ups. And that's okay. Messing up is okay. Failing is okay, because each failure, each mess up, each error leads you to more success, to better learnings, and to higher earnings if you're in the sales profession. Next big idea that Cardone shares in the book is taking massive action. The concept of massive action is as simple as it sounds. Whenever you put action into something, you want to make the amount of action that you put in a massive amount. And this rule, in fact, Cardone even wrote a book about it. He wrote a book called The 10X Rule, which we've summarized over at getflashbooks.com. And it's all about this whole idea of taking massive action. And the rule, it comes into play from the very beginning of whatever it is that you're doing, from the very beginnings of your rise to greatness in sales and everything else in life. The idea here is that every problem that you tackle, every goal you decide to aim for, every project idea that pops into your head, you want to throw yourself in it headlong. Become a fanatic. Be so motivated. Work so hard that others are going to tell you that you're being unreasonable. Good. Be unreasonable. Most people think that when you're faced with a prospect that requires your attention, there are three types of action that you can take. Number one, you can take the right action. Number two, you can take the wrong action. Number three, you can take no action at all. Obviously, of the three, taking no action is the worst choice you can make, because no action means no results. But there's a fourth action. The fourth action is taking massive action. And it's the fourth course, again, that most people don't think about. They don't think, okay, maybe if I put some more of myself into this, then I could do better. Maybe if I collect more resources or get more help, then I could do better. And again, massive action, it's about deciding how much effort will be required and then multiplying that effort by 10x. More action usually means more results, as long as the actions you're taking are not negative and are instead moving you in a positive direction. And if that's the case, then taking massive action, it's got no downsides, baby. It's only going to lead to problems if you use the term problems in a very loose sense. You'll no longer have the problem of having too few clients, because now you'll have the problem of having so many clients that you're almost unsure if you can keep all your appointments. But what an excellent problem to have, isn't it? Use massive action. Work like a madman or madwoman. Spend so much extra effort that others are amazed beyond belief by the results that you're creating in your life through this 10x effort, this massive action. You know, people, they chronically underestimate the amount of time, resources, energy, and effort it'll take to achieve their goals. And the idea of taking massive action is to overestimate these levers to help you expedite the speed at which you go from start to finish. Here's a great actionable insight, an exercise that he recommends in the book. You want to write down at least one time when you underestimated how much effort was necessary to reach a goal and how much you underestimated this effort by and why. You want to write that down. Write down at least one time you underestimated how much effort or energy or resources that you needed in order to achieve a goal, and then write down how much you underestimated by and why. Second thing you want to do is write out a list of your current goals and how much effort you think each of them will take to achieve. And then you want to compare these to the time that you underestimated and consider if you need to reevaluate your current goals and the amount of energy they're going to take to achieve. And then thirdly, you want to write out what your action will look like to reach your goals with your current expected amount of effort. Then write out what it will look like with 10x that amount of effort, 10 times that amount of effort. So however much you think it's going to take you to achieve that goal, however much energy, however much action, however many resources, whatever it is, however many people, whatever you need to do, whatever amount of energy that is required for you to achieve whatever goal you want to acquire, whatever goal you want to achieve, multiply that by 10. And that's how much you really need to be putting into it. Try it. See whether it works for you. See whether overestimating is better than underestimating. Okay, the fourth and final big idea that I'm going to share with you from Sell or Be Sold is this. You are in the people business. We are all in the people business. In the book, Cardone tells us that if you understand the product before you understand people, you're putting the cart in front of the horse. As a salesperson at any capacity, whether you're a seller of ideas or a seller of physical products, you've got to put yourself in the buyer's shoes. Only the ability to think like a customer will allow you to easily and repeatedly sell to customers. One baseline rule here is to remember that people like to feel good. They like to buy products they think will make them feel good. But more importantly to you as a salesperson, they like to feel good as they're buying. Even though they know they're being sold to, customers don't like to feel like they're being sold to. Nobody does, not you, not me. We don't like being sold to. That just feels sleazy, right? And this goes back to the whole reason why the stereotypes of sleazy salespeople were developed in the first place, because nobody likes to be sold on something. Nobody likes to be sold and convinced and persuaded to do something. People like you and I, all of us, even though you know this, and even though you know that it's a cognitive bias that we have, it's a bias for control, and we can't help it. We don't want other people to tell us to do something. We want to be able to control that decision. We want to be able to choose to do something. We want to be able to choose to buy something or to not buy something. And when other people start encroaching on our psychological space by trying to sell us on something, it doesn't make us feel good. And you might be selling a product to a customer, but it's more precise really to say that you are selling a customer on a product. The product is there no matter what. You won't have a sell if you don't have a buyer. So you want to know your product, but don't focus on the product. Focus on the buyer. Focus on the customer, the client, the person that you are there to serve, to help, to contribute positively to their lives. You are there to help the buyer, and you want to get to know them. When you're with a customer, that customer should be your sole focus. They should be the most interesting person in the world. You don't want to just greet them and immediately launch into your sales pitch, because talking at somebody is not the same as talking with somebody. Instead, you want to greet them. You want to immediately start building a relationship, and you want to let them know that they've got your 100% attention. You want to ask them question after question and actually listen to the responses. You want to pay attention to the undertones, the hesitations that they have, the emotional responses that they're giving you, the body language, those tiny little cues, so that you can tease out the concerns and the hopes that they're less willing to tell you initially. Really, you want to show them that you care, that you give a damn, and you don't want to pretend to care. You really do actually want to care. If a customer doesn't think that you're paying full attention, or if they start to sense that you're being dishonest in any way or that you don't care, whatever confidence that they might have had with you in the beginning, poof, it'll be gone. It'll vanish. So you always want to assume that the customer distrusts you when you first meet. Earn their trust and make sure that they feel like you trust them as well. Actively believe what they are saying about their reasons for shopping. Then help them. Now, of course, this doesn't mean that you want to follow the cliche advice that the customer is always right. We all know that the customer is not always right. But whatever advice you do want to follow is to always agree with the customer. You always want to agree with the customer. And the difference between the two is that with the latter tip, you still have room to show the customer why they should change from their original opinion to your opinion. If you simply tell somebody that they're correct flat out, then the conversation's done. It's over. They won. Without backpedaling at this point, you have no chance to debate further. And backpedaling makes you look less confident and honest and frustrates the customer, decreases their trust in you. Agreeing, that allows maneuvering. It's not manipulation. It's assuring the customer that you understand their position before offering them an alternative. And you'll never reach an agreement, by the way, if you are not agreeing. So for example, if a customer tells you that they're interested in your product, but that they've heard rumors of mixed reviews, definitely don't flatly tell them that they're wrong, but also don't tell them that they're right. Instead, agree. For instance, say, I understand that there are some mixed reviews floating around, but here, let me show you these statistics. Boom, 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 boom. Then you can ease into it, right? You've made a positive transition. You've agreed, hey, I understand where you're coming from. I know about those mixed reviews, but let me show you these stats here. Boom. Now you've agreed with them, but you've also led them toward a new way of thinking. Additionally, providing documentation, that's an excellent way, by the way, to gain further trust. It's easier to believe what you see than what you hear. And if you show a customer graphs of positives versus negative reviews and other evidence for your claims, then they'll be exponentially more likely to quickly believe you instead of the rumors. So keep that in mind. Build a relationship with your customer. Do everything you can to make their decision an easy one. Make them your friend. Show them that you care. Show documentation. Show other forms of social proof. Address their concerns. Don't focus on what commission you're going to get from them. Focus on what you can give to them. Sales is all about giving. So give every customer your all. One final exercise you can try from this big idea, you can try Cardone's Agreement Challenge. Now the goal here is simple. Reaching it though is not. Try to agree with everyone you talk with for a straight 24 hours. Each time you outwardly disagree, you want to restart the clock. Now again, this doesn't mean that you believe they are right. It just means that you are transitioning from a disagreement attitude to an agreement attitude. You can create less friction with people if you always agree with them. If, for instance, somebody says that, you know, you say you just got a black car, brand new black car, it's beautiful. But you roll up and, you know, one of your good friends says, man, you know, this is really fresh. I like it a lot, but, you know, you really should have gotten white. It would have been much better if you got white, because then it would be less, it wouldn't get it dirty as easily. It wouldn't show those rain marks on it and blah, 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 blah. And so you say, instead of saying, hey, screw you, bro, get the hell out of here. I like this car. I wanted to get it in black. You say, you know what, dude, I agree. That's a good point. But I just really like the way that this black looks. It shines better when I get it waxed. And, you know, it's just my style. Boom. You don't have to agree necessarily. You don't have to believe them. You don't have to believe what they say, but you also don't need to fight. And that's the idea, is agreeing with elegance. And so those are some of the big ideas that I want to share with you from Sell or Be Sold. If you want to get the full book summary, by the way, on this, you can scoop it up over at getflashbooks.com. Again, that's getflashbooks.com if you want the full audiobook summary for this book, Sell or Be Sold. Until next time, you know what to do. Go out there every single day and keep on living like you give a damn. It's Dean. Listen, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the podcast. If you found this episode inspiring, or if anything else you've heard on the show has helped you or made an impact on your life in any way, I'd really appreciate it if you showed me a little love with a quick review over on iTunes or on whichever podcast platform you tune into the show on. Every single review helps us reach and inspire more people to live like they give a damn. Listen, if you've got self-help questions of your own that you'd like me to answer live on the podcast, hit me up over at meaningfulhq.com. You can submit them over on the contact page, or you can just shoot your questions directly to me at questions@deanbakari.com. Thanks again so much for subscribing, sharing, and tuning into the show. I've said it before, I'll say it again. It's because of you and tens of thousands of other listeners from around the world tuning in every single week, week after week, day after day, that we are able to continue creating content to help you crush it and make an impact in your life and at work. So thank you for being part of this and continuing to share the podcast with your friends, your family, and anyone else you think it could help. Until next time, this is Dean Bakari telling you to go out there every single day and live like you give a damn.